This is the most excited I've ever been about a guest.
This is Petey Page.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
In my neighborhood where I grew up, we had a little mom and pop record store. There was a DJ who used to work there part-time. And he used to introduce me to all kinds of stuff. And he actually gave me a copy of Psychoactive.
Oh, wow.
When I was a kid. So I've been a fan since then.
Wow, man. That's actually beautiful. I really appreciate you telling me that. Like, one of the things that I've been noticing is that, like, I've been able to grow up with a couple generations that have, you know, known me through my music and been paying attention to what I've been doing all these years. So it's really dope. One of the best things for me besides meeting new fans are meeting the fans that have been there the whole time or from like the beginning. It's really dope. So, man, thank you for letting me know that. That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man.
Now, I guess there's so much to talk about because, I mean, you have one of the most interesting stories that I think any music artist has had.
Yeah. It's definitely been a ride, man.
And so for anybody who doesn't know the backstory, I don't even know if there's an easy way to kind of sum it up, but you were involved in a legal issue where they used lyrics of yours against you in court. And the crazy thing about it, I remember the DJ who introduced me to Psychoactive explained this to me. And I remember, and just being young and naive, I was like, how is that even possible? And now you actually see that a lot. You see different artists in different mediums are being used against them, even actors and things like that.
Yep. Yeah, that was the first time in hip hop history where something like that had occurred, where lyrics were being used against someone in a case, as well as the artwork from my album cover, which they surmised and put out in public for people to assume that that was a murder weapon, even though they never found a murder weapon and never performed forensics on anything. So now people have been more educated and understand how this works. But at that time, you know, they show a picture and say, there's the murder weapon, and people actually ran with that. So it was a vulnerable time for someone to be a member of the hip hop community. Evidently, that's still true. But, you know, I think some personal responsibility has to be taken when it comes to things like that with what we're communicating, our messaging, our imagery. But for a lot of those guys, the bigger guys, they don't necessarily even make the decisions about that, you know. So you have a corporation dictating how they present themselves. And then you have the justice system actually prosecuting them for it. It's a hell of a dynamic. But in my circumstances, yeah, we were definitely in a trailblazing circumstance, I guess, ass backwards. But we made history in that regard.
Absolutely. It's amazing to see, you know, not only are you still making music, but the quality of the music that you're still putting out after all this time. I think any artist, even somebody who hasn't been what you've been through, you usually see a decline in quality. And the stuff that you're putting out with Strange sounds incredible. I've been listening to everything that you've been putting out. I was so excited to see you on the song with Come From Vampire a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, man.
Everything that's been coming out. Now, does the situation of what happened with you, does that affect, you mentioned, you know, artists taking responsibility as far as how they're presenting themselves. Does that ever come into your mind now when you're working on music? That something could be used against you again at some point?
It doesn't come into my mind in that particular way. I know originally when I was on parole, and this is an interesting thing that we never hear in the prison conversations when people discuss prison and rappers, because none of them have that story to tell it. But as a lifer, when I came home on parole, they give you what's called a grant. So I was granted parole and the governor allowed that to go forth and then I was released, but I was still a lifer. So if I got in trouble, say for instance, someone with a determinate sentence who came home, but they're on parole, if they have a dirty P test or they say something that people disagree with, the worst case scenario is a slap on the wrist. Maybe they do 90 days or they violate and they have to serve a year. But with overcrowding, that never happens. So you have people who don't really run the risk of being returned to prison for extensive time. But if you're a lifer and I violated parole and I returned to prison, I would literally have a life sentence reinstated. And so they do a rescission hearing. And at that rescission hearing, I'd have to argue about why whatever, my lawyer would have to argue why whatever occurred wasn't my fault. or if it was my fault, how I accept responsibility. And then if they agreed, I could go back home. And if they didn't, I would go back to the yard with a life sentence. So I spent from September 14th of 2018 until March 1st of 2022 on a bit of eggshells, in a sense of just trying to be conscious of how I represented for myself and the people who had stood up for me on my way home. You know, just I wanted to be responsible for that. I didn't want to do something or say something that could be embarrassing for the people who came to my defense at that time. There's a lot of powerful people stood up for me and spoke up. One of them being Brian Shafton, who is still involved in my career to this day. You know, he actually wrote a letter to them, to appointees of the California governor, to get me home. And so introduced me to Betty Yee, the state controller of California. So, you know, that's a man that I feel like I want to honor him. So more than being conscious of the state and ramifications for that, I was more conscious of how something could be impactful to people who had stuck their necks out for me. But I think my reasoning for making sure that my messaging is where I want it to be is primarily related to a sincere change within myself as a human being. I think that's really what it is. But somebody could say, you know, hey, you know, there's a huge shift in content and what I'm actually expressing in my music in terms of my ideologies. And that is just a result of growth as a person. And I feel like that's more important to me than to be concerned about the state. As an artist, you know, Dave, you know, you don't want the man to win. If I'm self-censoring as a result of being worried about the fucking government, then I'm a lame and I just don't need to make music, you know?
Yeah, that's totally true. Do we feel the same way? We haven't really been in any dire straits like that, but like, fuck the man. I'm down with that. we say whatever we want on here, so.
Yeah, man, we want to be, you know, Mr. Smith is going to pop up and try and take you out. It is what it is. We're in the Matrix. And I want to win. I'm not joining them. I'm definitely not taking the blue pill. So there we go.
By Mr. Smith, you mean LL Cool J's trying to take us all out, right?
Yeah, I've always felt that. Yeah, shout out to the GOAT, man. He sent me a DM a couple weeks ago. Good dude.
Very cool. So how did you end up hooking up with Strange Music?
So I am very, very close friends with King Iso. Our relationship goes back prior to even him being signed to Strange Music. And at the time when I first came home, you know, I was very much interested in working with Iso on music, being somebody who supported him in his career and his decision making. And so we had a lot of conversations, and there came a point where once he signed to Strange Music, he was advocating for me to Travis O'Gwynn and the Tech N9ne. He's like, man, you know, you guys really got to meet this guy. If you talk to him, man, you're going to be blown away. And I'm big on organic circumstances, and having interacted with them, I consider Tech N9ne to be one of, if not my best friend, and Travis O'Gwynn to be somebody that I have a significant amount of love and respect for. He's like, you know, in my life, somebody that I put on a pedestal. So I respect them and the way that they go about doing things. So, you know, the world I come from, you want to have an organic experience with somebody. So I ended up in Kansas City with Brother Lynch on to do a show. And my phone just started blowing up, people calling me. You know, there's this thing that happens where a lot of stuff goes from the street up. And so I started getting calls from the street, like, yo, where you gonna have dinner at? What you doing tomorrow? I'm like, what's going on? You know, what's up? And like, Tech is asking about you. He wanna know, you know, where you gonna be with you. They're gonna be a barbecue, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, tell them to call me. Like, you know, I don't know, like, is this real, not real? Like, and I got a show. I just now got in my hotel. I'm like, just tell them to hit me up then. And then those calls increased in the who was calling. So then I get a call from King Iso, and he's like, yo, you talked to Tech yet? I was like, nah. He was like, oh, you will. He was like, give it a minute, you will. And, you know, we laughed and he got off the phone. And then I heard from Triz. So Iso and Triz were the two people who, when they said it, it was like, all right. So Triz called, he's like, what you doing for dinner? I'm like, man, I'm about to go to this place around the corner. I give him the name of it. I think I was at Lowe's in downtown KC, beautiful hotel. And so I went around the corner for dinner, and he's like, well, I'll be there in 15 minutes. Tech could be there in 30. I was like, let's go. So sure enough, I get to the restaurant. We all chilling, doing what we doing. And Trez walks in about 15 minutes after that, 30 minutes after that, Tech walks in, mask on, you know, but you can't. And he has a certain kind of energy in a room. I've been told, you know, that's something that people experience when I enter a room. Tech has a glow about him and a certain kind of posture and stature. And so I was like, oh, shit. Tech just walked in the room. He walks up, gives me a hug. He's like, man, it's been a long time coming. I knew this day would come, man, and it is beautiful to be with you, man. And we sat down. We ordered a bunch of food, broke bread. Spent a few hours together, about 2 or 3 hours together, just chopping it up, real natural experience. And then he went to the bathroom and he comes back and he hands me his phone. And it was Travis on the phone. And he's like, hey, man, you know, I heard a lot of really good things about you. And I was curious to know what you're up to on Monday. So this is June 11th of 2021. And so that Monday, I think would have been the 14th, I ended up, he wanted me to come to Strange and do a meeting. So I ended up going to Strange, did a tour, spent about 4.5 to 5 hours with Travis. And knowing him, you know, to carve out that kind of time for somebody, you know, he's a very intentional person. He has very little wasted motion and or words. So for him to spend that lot of time, that amount of time with me was significant in my psychology. You know, I got to tour the facility, saw Tech, he was rehearsing, spent some time with him. And yeah, man, it kind of started from there. Next thing you know, they came to Vegas, or Tech came to Vegas. They were at the Aria, and, you know, I had him roll the red carpet out for him. Him and his lady, it was her birthday weekend, I believe, and did some good things for them as a friend and a brother that they appreciated, and vice versa. And then about 2 or 3 weeks after that, here comes Travis. So Travis comes to Vegas, and I took him to a meeting with the city manager, the mayor's office, my investors, my business partners. He toured my facility. It was a lot shorter tour than I had with him, just for the footprint. I have 5,000
tour videos.
Right. I got 5,000 square feet at the time. So it was a little different running around with him, but yeah, he hung out in the studio, listened to a little bit of music, talked to my investors, and he's like, man, this is beautiful. About 2 weeks after that, ISO showed up, spent some time with ISO, did some music. But long story short, it just snowballed. I fly out to KC. I was recording with Robert Rebeck. I'm a huge fan of Robert Rebeck and the sound that originated between him and Tech when they were doing the Angelic Project. And you know, those, that window where people are like, you know, Strange Music was like this, the greatest force in hip hop in that, at that mid-major level. And so I was working with Robert Rebeck out here, and I would, while I was in town, I don't know how, same thing with Tech goes to Vegas, my phone blows up. Hey man, your boy's in town, like your boy's in the mall. I'm like, make sure he's safe. And so I get off the plane, I go to the hotel, and 5 minutes later, my phone is ringing, and there's somebody asking me, you know, telling me Tech is trying to make sure you're good. You need anything, let us know. So, yeah, so I ended up like going to meals with him, hanging out, chilling with his family, very personal experiences, and travel Tech me to dinner, things like that. So it progressed pretty smoothly. I ended up doing Still Right Here with him. And, you know, Travis just loved that song. He's like, man, we got to shoot a video. So we ended up doing this epic freaking $1 million video, and
it's a badass video. I dug it.
Thank you, man. I me as well. Definitely the most major production that I have been involved in to date. It's a beautiful opportunity, and I feel like I did justice on the song. So that led to other opportunities, and it just snowballed from there, man. It was very natural and a great fit. I'm proud to be, you know, Strange Music, man. It's beautiful.
Sure. Very nice. It's funny too that you mentioned King ISO. I didn't know about your specific connection with him. He hosted one of the Underground Hustling mixtapes that I was on.
Wow. I'm not surprised with him when it comes to music, man. That dude is prolific in a way that, you know, I had access to the computer, man. And you got to spend a few very cold winters and long years to catch up with the amount of music he got in that computer, man. Yeah, that dude is a worker. He's a worker.
Did you do a lot of stuff? Did you do a lot of recording in Kansas City?
Yeah, I'd say I started. Well, I had been working with Robert Rebeck since before I came home. So, like, my project Psychoactive 2 was mixed by Rebeck and mastered by Bernie Grubman. Brian Gardner did it. I was proud of that because it was like 2 weeks after he did Eminem's album, he mastered mine. And then prior to that, he did my Sacramentally Disturbed projects. So this is like 2012, 2011. So I had been working with Rebeck before I got out. And so once I was home, I would record in California and email the files to Rebeck. And so after I ended up doing that show with Brother Lynch in Kansas City, you know, I'll pull up on Rebeck out there in Kansas and spend some time in the studio with him. And it was so natural that I just started jumping on the plane and coming to work with him regardless. So like I'd be in KC and no one would know except for Tech and Travis, you know, that it's just very difficult to move around and they don't find out about it. I guess, especially being me, I'm trying to be incognito, but that didn't work. It's like X is definitely in town. It's like, Tech will call me like, man, how come you didn't tell me you were going to blah, blah, blah. And we end up having a fantastic meal. But yeah, I would be recording with Rebeck, be listening to his production, just trying to capture a certain kind of magic that I felt like, you know, Strange Music, Travis, Tech, and Rebeck had generated, and then Ben. And so once I signed my deal with Strange, I think I had out of 17 of those songs, I think I had about 15, I'd say 14 of them done. And so I signed my deal, did the Asinine tour, then we announced that I had signed at Red Rocks. And then I got back and I just smashed from June to, I turned my album in August. So from June to August, me and Ben at Strange Music just smashed on it, the vocals, the arrangements, making sure that everything was the way I wanted it to be. And it was beautiful to be able to bounce that off of ISO and Tech. Cause that's what I came for. The truth of the matter is like, I consider myself to be like, I think Matthew Stafford is a bad example, but let's say, you know, I'm a player that I believe has always been a very, very, very elite player, but wasn't playing for a championship team.
Jalen Hurts?
Well, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, we're Philly based, so I'm just throwing it out there because he's going to be there next. He's the next guy.
Jalen Hurts is technically actually on a championship caliber team. Like, he's literally 5 minutes and one fumble away from winning a Super Bowl. You know?
Are you kidding me? I was so mad.
Oh, I'm going to reserve my opinion on that entire thing on behalf of the San Francisco 49ers. I'm from Northern California, man. So I just felt like, you know, as a player who wanted to win rings, I wanted to play with Tech N9ne and King ISO as an elite player and say, let's go win some championships. And that was my motivation for coming over. I always tell Travis that he's like Phil Jackson. You know, if you're Kobe Bryant, you want to play for Phil Jackson. That's all there is to it. Like you coached Michael Jordan, being successful, best ever. And here I come. And that's how I felt. I don't have a lot of time to waste. I need to be doing everything at the highest level, have the most efficiency and just be moving to make up for the time that I lost. So for me, having access to a coach as sophisticated and capable as Travis, and to have a quarterback like Tech N9ne and a wide receiver like King ISO, for me as a running back showing up, I just felt like, yeah, we're going to be hard to beat. And I think we've been proving that with the music we've been putting out together.
I'll hit you with a better one for you, with a better analogy. So you're sort of like, when you get drafted out of Davidson and you go to a team that ain't that good and you make them great, and then the people around you are great, And then you just want to continue to be around great people, much like Steph and the Warriors. Because you said Northern Cali, I got to go there because that's my team. I forsook the Sixers, man. Forget them. They're junk. I love the Warriors. Steph's my guy.
Yeah, I got a ton of respect for Steph and the Warriors. Oakland was real good to me, San Francisco, the Bay Area. So I'm definitely pro Warriors and pro Bay Area. Sacramento doing very well. See, I got the purple light, so like the beam, you know, Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, it's that whole Bay Area is ever since the Clippers got rid of their owner, everybody's been picking it up except the Lakers. The only team that can't seem to make it work, except today. They stomped the Warriors today.
Oh, yeah, man. If they played 10 games, though, that wouldn't happen like that.
Oh, yeah. I gave up on basketball after Iverson gave up because that was a tough thing for Philly to deal with, and they just misused Iguodala so bad. And then not to keep going on sports, I was in Rome, Rome, Georgia, and we were at a minor league ball game, and we went to Pizza Hut to get pizza. And I was like, there was a total culture shock because I was calling it deep dish, and they call it pan pizza. And, and the girl wasn't understanding what I'm saying. I was like, I just want a deep dish pizza. It's like a thick crust. She goes, you mean like pan pizza? And I'm like, yeah. That I was like, I think that's the same thing. Meanwhile, on the TV, now I haven't watched basketball in 6 years at this point because I gave up on it. Yeah. I watched Steph take shots in the championships against LeBron that I would get yelled at for taking on a playground. And this dude's taking them and making them like he meant to do it. And I'm like, this dude's insane. So then I started watching him, and I'm like, dude, the whole culture of the Warriors is just like, it's just so Bay Area and so Oakland that like, it's just beautiful. And I was like, I'm a Warriors fan now. I'm Philly everything else, but I'm Warriors 100%. Like I got the NBA pass. I watch every game. I love Steph, dude. I fight people here all because Philly ain't the type of city you could just like another team. Like you got to defend it. And I'm like, bro, I'm like, let me let you know. And like people love it because they're like, oh, you just like the Warriors because they're good. I was like, no, I like the Warriors because they're great. I was like, and they're better than the Sixers. And then you spit facts and you start doing stats. And you're like, I was like, plus, here's my out. The Warriors was the original Philly team that moved to Oakland. So technically, I'm more of a Philly fan than most of the Philly fans that are here because you guys are like in Washington. And that's where the Sixers came from. I'm like in the original Philly team and I just followed it to a different state. Sorry to go off on that rant, but I get what you're saying with you want to surround yourself with winners.
It's a legitimate argument. And the irony is like I'm from Sacramento and I essentially got traded to Kansas City and the Sacramento Kings were the Kansas City Kings and they got traded to Sacramento. So
that's beautiful. That's poetic.
It works perfectly.
Now, you mentioned how you went out on the Asinine Tour. Are we going to get an X-rated headlining tour?
We are. That is something that is being coordinated on my side with our booking agent and Travis O'Gwynn. You know, we got to deal with Corey and Travis over there at Strange just to be respectful with what we got going on. But I will be doing the album's called Prayer in Hell. So I will be doing a Prayer in Hell tour most likely for the fall, the late summer, early fall. So as of now, I'm thinking our August 1st start date that is what been sent to me. So we'll see what happens with that as we fill it up and run those cities out. But I'm going to run around, definitely coming to Philly.
Yeah.
We will I'll be there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah, I did the Brooklyn Bowl in 22, so it'd be beautiful to come back, man, get some energy.
If you get your dates set and you want to come on and promote the dates down here, you can come on again too, man. No problem.
Absolutely, man. I'll do that.
Now, you mentioned the album coming out. Do you have any kind of release frame for that yet?
So we have they made a soft announcement, but the hard announcement hasn't happened yet. But we're going to be early May. We'll be dropping it. And I believe, we just did the Many Apologies single on February, I think, 24th. And then we'll do, I think I might be wrong. Probably like a week ago or two. I forget. But it was pretty recent. And then we have a single dropping this month on the 24th, and then we'll drop another massive video experience in May. So yeah, there's a lot coming for me. A lot of, you know, again, Travis Ogwen being the coach that he is, there's a full rollout and a lot going on. So I just kind of chill out. I got a beautiful, you know, new house and a lot to do and get furniture shopping, everything, you know. So for me, I just stay busy and wait and answer my phone on the first ring when I see the right names. And generally speaking, it's been a big, beautiful blessings damn near every time. So I'm excited for what we got going, and I'm very, very confident in the album we made for sure. It's beautiful.
Very nice. I'm definitely looking forward to that. Now, do you, I don't know if this is something you had planned already, but, you know, obviously everything is streaming nowadays. Are you planning on a physical release as well, though?
Absolutely. Yeah, we will have a pre-order link that'll go up shortly for the album, the physical album, the digital album, everything, a t-shirt. They got a whole package that, you know, to be put together for the fans. So yeah, man, we're doing physical product. We will be doing corresponding merch and all of that, all of that. Man, I got to do everything right, man. I just feel like I don't have time to be playing around. You know, I told ISO, I feel like Jordan after the retirement. So I'm like, we wore number 45 for a couple games that said, screw that. And so now I'm gonna let me get these next three rings real quick. So, I mean, we're doing everything the right way. We're rolling it out. You know, the messaging is where I want it to be. And again, you know, I want to be very consistent in my mission and what it is that I want to be pushing. And we got an album that is pushing a very specific agenda. What I think is, I wouldn't say wrong with the culture, but things that need to be challenged in hip hop culture and perspective. And so this album is definitely going to be a curveball for a lot of people. I say if Jordan Peele made a hip hop album, it'll be a prayer in hell for sure.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
I assume with those bundles, there will be CDs and everything. Are you guys going to do vinyl or anything as well?
That'll be a Travis decision. I wouldn't be surprised. I would be happy, and I put it right up on the wall next to my Senate thing I got over here. But yeah, man, I definitely hope we do vinyl. I'm a big fan. The lead time on vinyl is nuts. So like, I tried to do some vinyl in 21, and the period of time it took was just like 9 months to get your product back. And I couldn't find anything better than that. So you gotta be really far ahead of things like that. So that's a thing that Travis is really good at in terms of forecasting and scheduling. And so I wouldn't be surprised at all if he'd already taken care of it, knowing him.
You mentioned Jordan Peele, and it just reminded me of a question. Has anyone offered you like a movie deal to tell your story?
So we're in discussions. I've had a lot of discussions. Met the rep from Netflix, had a show in Vegas. Travis and Tech have endless connections. So my perspective shifted toward in this era that we're in, and so many platforms and different ways to do things. I'm very hesitant to give my story away, you know? So
yeah.
I have an autobiography that is 2/3 written. It's broken into 3 books. And so book 1 and book 2 are done. And so we'll be going to press with that. And then we have to do the editing process, but there'll be the autobiography, book 1. And then our desire is to have a corresponding documentary with that and a soundtrack. So three soundtracks. The docuseries chopped in 3 parts, and the book itself, and then hoping that someone will come and attempt to license the rights. So I'm in contact with Scott Butnick. He's somebody that I admire and have a ton of respect for, and he's paying attention to me right now. So we'll see what happens, but that'd be a layup for him easy, as somebody who did Just Mercy with Michael B. Jordan. And you know, he could blink and make that happen. So I feel like I'm surrounded by the right people, and it's best for me to just do the work and finish what I'm doing in regard to the autobiography, because I think that's going to be the most informative thing for the film. So that's been my focus, is just to get that autobiography done and make sure I get it out there and see what happens from there.
Yeah, especially with the exposure from the movies as it's starting to, they're starting to come out now, where it's like the biopics are becoming like super, they're introducing people who didn't know, I want to say, the underbelly a little bit. I mean, there's still the biopics I get are still, you know, Hollywood. They don't tell everything, but it's like you're starting to get, you're starting to see from that era a lot more of a lot more to culture. Like I didn't get to see Straight Outta Compton yet, and I'm mad at myself for that. But I saw Notorious, and even though it was very, very much Hollywood, like the cues in the movie, everybody was like, "That's not how it happened." I was like, "You really wanted? You really like? It's he's they got to tell the story." I get that. Just all of a sudden, Biggie didn't fall under the lyrics while he was sitting in his prison cell the second he got off the phone with his mom. But like, you want to sit through 6 months of him being in prison figuring it out? Like, I get it. I can see. Yeah. I can see a synopsis of it. I don't need the details right away. I get it.
Yeah, but we got Hollywood magic, man. We definitely need that.
But with that coming out, I mean, you had the Tupac movie, you had the Straight Outta Compton, you have Notorious. I don't even know what's in the pipeline, but there's probably I'm Wu-Tang has a show. I would imagine that something's going to be a movie, like Red Man the movie. So there's got to be something else coming. And I mean, to capitalize on that now, I mean, your story is so great. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like if you don't capitalize, like I almost want to be like, dude, what are you thinking? Yeah. That's why I'm so glad you said that you were doing stuff. Cause I'm like, man, perfect. Like, get it out there.
Yeah. I definitely agree. And I would take the advice if you gave it to me for sure. But, fortunately, we know a little bit better than that. So I think it would be a mistake not to tell the story. I know they got Snoop Dogg's his biopic coming. I know DOC has one, which is very interesting for me as somebody who's a huge DOC fan. I think right now the people who grew up through that era are in power in Hollywood or in positions where they have influence in Hollywood. So I think this is a great time for these stories. It's kind of the perfect storm for me. So yeah, I'm doing what I got to do. I own the rights to the story. So they got to license it for me, and that's beautiful. And I love knowing that I got a Travis in my corner to make sure I get the best circumstance.
That's awesome. Now, like, just, you know, imaginary situation. If they were making a movie today about you, who would you want to see play you? Would you want it to be an unknown, or would you want an established actor?
I would very much like to do or to experience. I know I probably wouldn't get to pick them, but like getting to be a part of the casting call to just see who came in there, because I would rather it was someone that would allow them to forget that it's an actor. I wouldn't want to get somebody who, watching them, you could only be watching them. You're thinking about their presence and them being there. So like, I love that they had a new actor for Tupac, because I didn't have to keep thinking about this guy and his history. It was a movie about Tupac. And so that's kind of what I would prefer. I prefer to find a very capable new actor or somebody who's been around but hasn't popped yet, but that had the demeanor and the essence of the character down, that would be beautiful. I would prefer that we go young and fresh to have to give somebody an opportunity to be able to tell that story, immerse themselves in the story, and capture that energy without bringing the baggage with them of their other performances.
Now, beyond just telling your story, is acting something you've looked more into yourself as well?
People keep telling me that I need to do something. I've done a couple auditions, reluctantly, just got badgered into it. But if the right role was offered to me, I'd be down for that. But right now, you know, I think me and ISO did some heavy acting the other day. We had a shoot that was awesome. And, we kind of just, we'll keep doing that. These music videos that are more like movies than they are. And I still right here, you know, had a full treatment and full story in it. I want to keep doing things like that. I know the guys at Strangeland, you know, we got a great team over there. Cameron, Caleb, all our guys are just really, really awesome dudes. Chris, the Stemple brothers. So they're like big time ready to make some movies. They're like, man, let's go. They're ready to, they're chomping at the bit. Because I mean, we got a full blown facility with every camera in it that you could think of. You know, Travis is like a big kid when you put him around technology. So there's everything that you would need to make a movie that already exists at Strangeland 100%. We probably would have to just get a few things, but in terms of like, if they woke up tomorrow and said, let's go, our guys could do it. So I think I'll keep doing what we're doing, let people see and embrace this aspect of my being. I think I kind of have been a mythological creature for a while where people just whispered about me, and now they get to put a face to that, an energy to it. So I think I want to spend definitely the next 6 or 7 months making sure people understand that level of artistry that we put into A Prayer in Hell and allow that to kind of spin off into other things. I'm pretty sure that'll probably happen. We made arguably one of the doper albums of the past decade, at least. It's a very aggressively put together piece of art for sure. So I think that could spin off into all kind of shit.
If I just thought of something that I'm just going to throw out there for you. You can use it if you want to. If you don't want to, it's no big deal. So you're doing a lot of stuff in Kansas City. I feel like a cool photo would be you in Kansas City, not far from the stadium, is Satchel Paige's grave. And you can actually go to Satchel Paige's grave. And it's like, I think that would be just a badass, especially because like a lot of the stuff is coming up in the next months and baseball season starting. To do some stuff near Satchel Paige's grave would be just fucking rad, like photo shoots and shit.
Yeah, it would actually. I know they got the Negro League Museum here.
So awesome. Have you been there?
I haven't been there. I've been down in that district in on Vine with some of the fellas, but I haven't actually gone to the museum. I have been working like a Hebrew servant. I have assembled several different pyramids. I have not had much time, man, to do anything other than work. And beautiful. Fortunately, I really enjoy. I have a job I love, but it's been hyper demanding. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm kind of like just trying to make sure my house is the way I want it, because I do spend a lot of time at home now, which is, you know, a trip. That's an adjustment I have to make, because when I first came home, I just was on the move so much. And I think, since the Asinine tour, this is the first time I've sat down for this amount of time, I think, period, since I came home. So I really am enjoying being at home. But I'm getting to that point. Me and Tech have been talking about that, because he's been somebody like, when I say Tech, Travis, and ISO have been instrumental in my perspective and like my life, I'm talking about like things like making sure I have my creature comforts are the way they're supposed to be, like that I'm returning home and I'm having an experience where I feel like I got my heaven on earth type thing. Yeah. And so like, that's something that, you know, Travis and Tech have been really instrumental about, and ISO when it comes to like how I organize my days. Those are the things that I needed to learn. And I got three successful men to be able to help me make that transition. It's somebody who like, hey man, you got it made, you know, do your man cave the way you want it to be. Got my own floor in my house, you know, get the living room, my sitting room, you know, I got 3,600 square feet to arrange. So I kind of just been obsessed with that. Honestly, whenever I'm not working, I'm just like looking at furniture and TVs and things like that. Frame so that I can put my album covers up and things like that. So I've really been enjoying myself, man. And so I got to get out a little more. I go to the movies. I'm a movie buff. So I'll end up at a theater but for the most part, man, we all just get together and eat, man, beautiful meals. And then we go off to our respective castles. And so
what kind of movies you dig?
Oh, anything related to comics. I love comics. So, anything that Marvel's doing in DC. Haven't been the biggest fan of some of the DC stuff, but I keep going because I torture myself.
I feel you. I have that same thing, man.
Yeah.
I had to watch Sandlot 3 because I can't not know. We talked about this on an earlier episode. I have like a tick where like if a movie comes out and it tells more of a story, I got to see it. I don't care how bad it is. So like I'm that guy that watches Home Alone 5 just to see where the story goes. even though I know it's probably just a bunch of crooks getting hit with paint cans. I know that's where it's going, but I need to see it.
Absolutely. I'm that guy too. I'm watching. I'm going to watch this and I know I hate it. I went to see Avatar. I was like, but I went and sure enough, it was in Black Panther Wakanda. I'm like, I'm going to go see this fucking movie. Ended 5 times, just started again. And I'm like, all right. And then The Matrix.
Matrix was a trash fire, man. Oh, I was so mad. I had such high expectations, and I don't know why I did. But I'm like, they're going to do this okay. Everybody relax. And then I watched it, and I was like, guys, I was way wrong. Don't listen to me ever again. I was like,
yeah, really trash. They single-handedly made me anti-woke. Like, I was fine. I was doing well. I was just as much willing to burn a fucking storefront down as anybody else after 2020. And then I watched that movie and I thought, like, I don't know when it happened, but like, I fucking hate woke shit. I really do. So I'm ruined. They ruined me. They ruined woke X. Left the building.
I don't know that I'm super mad about that. I'll be honest with you. I feel you. See, that it's funny you said about Wakanda too, because like I have that same thing with Wakanda. Like, I like the first movie. First Black Panther was great. I loved it. Ryan Coogler, amazing. I love Creed's. He does the Creed's. I love all the Creed's. But Michael B. Jordan. Oh, love that guy. I loved him since The Wire, man. He was great in The Wire.
Yeah. Fruitvale Station.
What's that?
The Fruitvale Station when he did the movie about what happened. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I even liked him in the Fantastic Four that everybody hates on. I liked him in that movie. I don't know that was the right role for him, but
I liked him. I just hated the movie.
The movie itself.
To separate like performance versus, hey, they gave you a shitty script to work with and you went out there and you tried to nail it. But like, not good. Great player, coach called a bad play. That's kind of what happened to him.
That's also got one of my boys in it, Miles Teller, Philly guy. He played that Mr. Fantastic in it. I was like, man, there's Philly all over this movie. And but it just sucked. So of course that's how it turned out. They had Charlie Tuna do the theme song, and I was like, yo, Charlie Tuna's doing the theme song. This is my movie. This has got to be good, right? No, big old dump right on my head. But
not good.
But I watched the second Black Panther. I'm like, and I know that there was production issues too, because I know that the girl that played his sister, Shuri, she was causing a big problem about not wanting to wear a mask and shit on set and like not following precautions. And I get that, but like, man, that movie was just so disjointed. And it's like, I really wanted it to be so much. And it just like you said, it stopped and then started again. And then it stopped and then started again. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what this is just spiraling out of control.
Yeah. And I'm over the whole, because this has become a current running theme with, I'm all for strong, powerful women. I am 100% pro that. I got amazing women that have done great things to make sure that my life didn't fucking go to shit, which it would definitely do absent the women in my life. However, Hollywood is very heavy-handed in its attempt to, you know, like Trinity has to save Neo and she's fucking flying around holding him by the hand. And now we have a female essentially become the Black Panther. Yep. It's just like, I'm kind of over that. I feel like, and I'm the same way. Hey, I don't need a Black Annie. I'm the guy that thinks the fucking
I just had this conversation with someone else. Like, you remember when they made this is what caused it for me. Remember when they made the Honeymooners movie and it was Cedric the Entertainer and Mike Epps? Yes. And it wasn't a bad movie. And I'm not against them making that movie, but like, why can't you just make a different movie?
Yeah, it makes that's a new like, shit.
That's original. Why does it happen? Or like when they did when Mike Epps did Uncle Buck.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I feel that way. I don't need a Black Superman. I'm good. Yeah. If Black Santa Claus shows up at my house, I'm pulling a gun on him. You know, I need a white Santa Claus. If Santa Claus is white, like I love the if we have Black characters that were Black from inception, awesome. You know, that's cool. Come up with new stuff. But in terms of taking over characters or making him female, or I definitely don't need a gay Superman.
I was about to say gay the gay and trans community too. It's like now every superhero they have, like Iceman and X-Men in the comics is gay. And I'm like, when did that happen? I was like, Iceman took a long time to come out of the closet because he sure didn't know back in the 60s that he was gay. All of a sudden, now he's wearing headbands and shit.
He had to thaw out.
But they did the same thing, too. Here's the joke I used to make all the time was, and people used to, all of the women that I'm friends with used to get so pissed. I'm going to make it on the air, and I don't care. It could piss them off again just as much as it did. But, like, when they did Ocean's 11, and those movies were just so great, and then they did Ocean's 8, and I was like, and everyone's like, I don't understand why it's Ocean's 8. I was like, it's the same reason why the WNBA has a smaller basketball. They got tiny hands. People used to get so pissed at me. And I'm like, that's a funny fucking joke. Like, say what you want about equality between the sexes, but that's a funny fucking joke.
It's a funny joke. But you know how, like, Bridesmaids was so good, but it was like, that was what it was. That's the way it fucking came out. Like, it was about that from inception. Like, you want a gay superhero that kicks ass? Awesome. You know what I mean? Let's go.
Yeah.
But leave Superman the fuck alone, though. Like, so, I mean, I'm just that guy. I don't feel like I need to be a part of the remix where, you know, every fucking every movie I watch now, the female has to save the men. And, you know, if that doesn't, I don't know. So I've had enough of that.
Or there has to be like a lesbian kiss, like every single show or movie. It's like
they did that in Wakanda Forever too. At the end, they just had to slip that in. I'm like,
checked
the fucking box, man. I just feel like, and it's not the kiss that got me, that set me off. It was the checking of the box. It felt mechanical. It was intentional, deliberate. I could feel the heavy-handedness of the decision, and I fucked it up because it's like it wasn't necessary, man. The bald-headed, muscular black chick with the fucking spear is probably a lesbian. Like, I didn't need her to kiss anybody to confirm that for me.
and to the opposite too. It's like in Walking Dead, she's all about Rick, and I'm like, so there's the juxtaposition of that, but like I don't need to see her from that perspective. No. And that's I slammed my popcorn in Infinity War when they had the scene where all the lady characters come together. I'm like, come on, man. They're all powerful, they can fight. I don't need to see them all fight together. Like, come on.
Yeah, they're checking the boxes, man. But hey, I don't know, man, why it needs to be done that way, but it's a hell of a message, you know. You don't need men anymore. The women got to save the men. Santa Claus is black. Superman's gay. There we go, man. So that's the fucking place. You talk about, I left in 1992 and returned in 2018. That's what I had to adjust to. So it's been interesting. That's been interesting. But I think, you know, in terms of there being empathy for what people go through, I respect that. And I think that's awesome. But in terms of just remixing every fucking thing for the sake of somebody's fucking participation trophy psychology, I just feel like, fuck that. So, yeah.
That's no, I'm 100% with you. I'm like, if you can make a movie, make a Ocean's 11, make a heist movie with just chicks. You don't have to call it Ocean's 8. She doesn't have to be his sister. That's strange. Just make a bunch of chicks that want to rob a fucking casino. I'm cool going to see in that movie. Ocean's 8 wasn't that bad. It was just, I was like, why has it got to be an Ocean's movie? Why not just make a movie? Bad.
It was unnecessary. There's a difference. Yeah. Like, yeah, I felt that way. And so I don't know. That's me. I've been
When you went away, it was Air Jordans, and now there's Crocs all over the place.
Literally.
That's gotta be a culture shock.
Cortez Nikes. I have not succumbed to that particular fad, or I don't know if it's a fad or that's the way it is, but I haven't done that. But I've seen some very solid alpha males sporting a pair, and I thought, hey, you know, leave it to King Iso to make a pair of fucking Crocs look cool. I was like, all right. You know, they don't make them like him no more. So it's hard to, you ain't gonna catch me in a pair of those. That's just, I'll stick to the Jordans and the Cortez Nikes, man. You catch me in some Timberlands or something. I'm gonna leave it at that. Hey, man, you're from fucking Philly. You guys threw snowballs and batteries at Santa Claus. So Like, I feel like I'm right at home right now.
Actually, technically, it was Batteries at John Rocker. It was Snowballs at Santa Claus, though. But John Rocker deserved it. He's an asshole.
I'm pretty sure history has absolved everyone who threw a battery.
Ah. I'll be honest with you. If you come down here, they don't give a shit.
That's my point. That's exactly.
They climb them poles. They grease them up before the winds, and people are sliding up and down them anyway.
Yeah, Santa with the fucking snowballs took the cake, though. I fucking loved it. Hey man, Philly's been instrumental, and in, like, when it comes to, I mean, fucking Rocky, Schoolie D. I don't know how many people remember Three Times Dope, but like Three Times Dope was so, I fucking love Three Times Dope.
Yeah, Bahamadia.
Oh man, then fucking, oh yeah, that's true. And then I get like Benny Siegel.
Oh yeah,
like the rappers, bars, you know. So for me, fucking love Philly, man. I think everybody's got a little, should have a little Philly in them. Like you got to have a little Philly in you, a little bit. You got to. We like, I fucking imagine me, Tech N9ne, Joey Cool, like nine of us walking from Brooklyn Bowl to that fucking, that cheesesteak place. Everybody's like, fuck the fucking mainstream cheesecake place. You got to go to the one, like this is the one the locals go to and you got to get the squeeze cheese on it, right? We literally walked from the fucking tour buses all the way to this place, just walking down the fucking street. We had security, but we just mobbing down the street in Philly to get our fucking cheesesteaks. They were awesome.
Oh, so yeah. Great. And it's, we used to, when I was at, I used to go to school in Westchester, which is right outside of Philly. And we used to, it's about 25 minutes. We used to get the boys at the, on the, and where we lived, we would get this one dude at his mom's van because he was driving it to and from college. We would just all load up in a van on like a Tuesday night and just be like, yo, you want to get cheesesteaks? And we rolled a patch of Geno's, Jim's, Shank's, all the places that you hear. Cause everybody in Philly has a spot. It's not just one spot. Like anyone you talk to is like, nah, you got to go to Aaron Mingo at like 3 o'clock when Papa J's is open and then they get the cheesesteak there. But we would just get piles and then just have them in the fridge, heat them up whenever we wanted to hang out at Westchester. Cause man, it was just on a Tuesday night. We'd be like, yo, let's go.
Hell yeah. I had cheesesteak for like 2.5 days. I was fucking that shit up. Hell yeah. You learn on tour, like you better get your dinner when you buy your lunch. And then you'll have a little bit left over for breakfast because you might get to the next city and it's all bad. So it's like, fuck that. I learned my lesson, man. I used to be a leftover snob. You could not pay me to eat leftovers. I turned my nose up to it. I thought, the fuck am I doing this for? I'll just go get fresh, brand new, awesome gourmet food. Man, please. Went on tour. I am the leftover king now. I will fuck food up for 3 days. Somebody had to tell me to throw it out. Like, I'm like, what are you doing, man? Don't throw that away. Fuck that.
There's still enough in there. That's a full meal, man. Come on.
Hell yeah, man.
Too.
Well, we know you're a very busy man. We don't want to take up too much of your time. But before we let you go, was there anything else you wanted to let people know about to keep an eye out for?
Yo, I just want to tell people, you know, on behalf of Strange Music, we got a lot coming. We are definitely about to show people what this new era is about, man. I feel very comfortable with it. So there's King ISO Music, X-Rated, Tech N9ne, new music from all of us. Joey Cool got an album almost done. Our boy Hush out of Project, Jerry Robinson. So I'm excited for the future, what we doing at Strange Music this year, for people to see what our rollout is and listen to this music and, you know, win a ring this year. I want to win a ring. And so...
So do I.
Hey, you're fucking close to the goal, man.
Oh man, it was such a heartbreaker. We just interviewed Hush. Speaking of Hush, we just interviewed Hush last week.
Yeah, he's a good dude, man. One of the smartest motherfuckers I ever met.
Yeah, he was sharp. Cool.
Yeah, man, he's a sharp, smart cat. I got a song I got to write with him probably this week. I think I've been sitting on that. I'm a little delinquent. But I've been justifiably distracted. But I got a song with him that I got to take care of. He's a good dude, and I'm looking forward to having some work with him.
Very nice, very nice.
All right, I actually have two more quick things that I need to bring up to you. One is our standard that we bring up to people that are on our interviews. Now, okay. We've talked about movies, and we've talked about, I feel like we're going to be on the same page with this. How do you Let's feel go. About Jared Leto?
Oh, shit. Doing anything other than the Joker, we're fucking solid.
Because we're against Leto in everything. And I'm forming a group called Friends Against Leto because I'm tired of him ruining movie franchises.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. I have an issue with him being the Joker. And so as long as he's not the Joker, I've been okay with it. Like, you know, I haven't joined a hate group.
You don't have to, and I'm not trying to pressure you into it. I'm just saying the invitation is there if you ever get to the point where you Jared Leto shunned me a long time ago in an earlier episode we talked about it. He very much tried to start a fight with me, and I've held on to it probably a lot longer than I should have, but for the sake of radio, it's a good bit. But we've reached out to him. We tried to get in touch with him just to talk to him about it. He won't even return the call. So as far as I'm concerned, the hate is still there. And I haven't seen a movie yet since I put my hooju on him that has actually made him have a good movie, because that Morbius movie was terrible. He was terrible as the worst Joker ever.
That was really bad. That was really bad. Oh, man. I accidentally discovered that those fucking chairs that move with the fucking air that shoots you in your face on accident at that fucking movie, the Morbius one. And I'm fucking in the chair. I'm like, what the fuck is this? I'm watching. And then the bats come out and I start flopping around. I had some anxiety. Definitely thought about getting the fuck out of there. But I toughed it out and I made it through the movie. The chair sucked, 4D sucks, and that movie, frankly, sucked. And
I found out 4D for Star Wars, the third one of the newer ones. You know, with a guy with glasses, when they're fighting over top of underneath the water, and you keep getting splashed where you can't see the screen because your glasses are covered in water, it doesn't help. And I was like, this is stupid. Why do we pick 4D? Why can't we just do IMAX like normal fucking people?
I definitely didn't want to be in 4D. I didn't want to.
So Jared Leto is.
Phil, Jared, we're going to need a response.
Yeah.
We're going to need you to address this issue, sir. The charges have been brought. I'm sure we have your attention at this point. And we're going to need to know, why'd you fuck up the Joker? We want to know.
I want to know why your best role was getting the shit kicked out of you by Brad Pitt in Fight Club. That was my favorite role he ever did because he got his face smashed in. I was like, yo, that's so good.
I want to watch Emancipation just so I can see him whip Will Smith.
But that's the first thing. The second thing that I have to say is you've been on the show. You are now officially a brutal dude.
Fuck
so yeah. Now you got an open invitation. Anytime you want to come on, even if you're not promoting shit, you just want to bullshit with us. Let us know, reach out, and we'll bring you on.
That'd be fucking awesome.
Proud to have you as one of us. And remember, Friends Against Leto, it's always open.
I'm going to keep my invitation. I think after he sees this, I probably will be forced to join the group. So reserve my spot. I do want to brag a little bit, so we're going to show this. I don't know if this is, but this thing, that is a real United States seal. And this That's is beautiful. Really good, presented to me for my a commendation for my efforts with criminal justice reform.
That's beautiful. That's awesome.
Framing these up and putting them on the wall. Shout out to Meek Mill with the reform community as well. Philly knows all about criminal justice reform. I've been doing my part.
We're the only stadium that had a prison in the bottom of the basement.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, man. Well, San Francisco has Alcatraz, even though they don't let anybody live there anymore. But there you go. So we'll take it.
You guys are keeping the Pirates at bay, the Raiders. So just as long as you keep them from attacking, then we're good.
Yeah, the Raiders fans are fucking tremendously dangerous. So I'm gonna just say hi guys. Hi, Raiders fans.
Raider Nation.
Oh, man. You guys are fucking awesome. I enjoyed the laugh. It was awesome, man. Anytime, let me know. We have let's give enough time for several dozen fucking horrible movies to come out. and then I'll pop back up and we can talk shit about that. And then football will start up, and definitely we'll have a lot to say as that's going on. So I don't have a problem making a couple appearances throughout the year, man.
Oh, dude, you're more than welcome, man. We love you.
Man, thank you. I love you guys, too. I really appreciate the support, the love. And definitely want to know after the album comes out, I will need to be back to know what you guys think about it. We got to talk about it.
Fuck yeah, dude. Absolutely.
Yep. Have a solid night, man. I'm about to get into this right here. Look at this.
Oh, that looks good.
Masterpiece, homemade salmon, fresh with my little sweet tea. It's going down. This is it.